Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's January 15th, 2020 program, Spotlight on the Coast, Economic Challenges and Opportunities. This is the 16th program of our 2020-2021 programming year. My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page, and are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 on Mondays at 7 p.m. We have both business and in-kind sponsors, including our diamond sponsors, Kaiser Permanente, University of Oregon, Peace Health, and Lane Community College, as well as generous support from the City of Eugene and from Lane County. Today's program is Spotlight on the Coast, Economic Challenges and Opportunities. As the new year dawns, communities throughout the Oregon coast face unique economic challenges and opportunities. On the one hand, as recently detailed by the Oregon Office of Economic Analysis, rural Oregon, including the coast, has lost a smaller share of jobs than urban Oregon since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. On the other hand, prior to the onset of the pandemic, rural Oregon had barely regained the level of jobs prior to the Great Recession of 2007 through 2009, continuing a troubling pattern of lagging economic growth. The effects of this geographic inequality go far beyond economics, affecting everything from life expectancy to access to health insurance. We're privileged to have the opportunity to hear from tribal, government, and business leaders on the coast about their work to boost opportunity in their communities and what all Oregonians can do to promote an economy of shared prosperity for all. Our speakers today include Senator Dick Anderson, representing Oregon's 5th Senate District, Chief Doc Slider of the Confederated Tribes of Coos, and Bettina Hannigan, President and CEO of the Florence Area Chamber of Commerce. Biographical information on today's speakers can be found on our website at cityclubofeugene.org. I would like to thank Andrew Kalich for coordinating today's program.
Hello, my name is Andrew Kalich. I'm a member of the program committee from the City Club of Eugene and the coordinator of today's forum on the coastal economy. Some of you might be wondering, I thought Eugene was on the eastern side of the coastal range, and you'd be right about that. We haven't relocated from the Lamon Valley. But more important than ever before, the City Club wants to reach out to all Oregonians, whether it's across the coastal range, the Cascade Range, or everywhere in between. I was reading The Other Oregon, an essential periodical, just this week, and there was a farmer from eastern Oregon, Nella May Parks, who wrote this, and I thought it was apt for today's session. What I want to see in 2021 is some good old-fashioned bridge building between urban and rural, Western Oregon and Eastern Oregon, young and old, between races, between political parties. But let's not construct a series of bridges to nowhere. I want bridges from here to a more perfect union, and I want people to start crossing them. And that's exactly what we're going to do today with an amazing group of community leaders on the coast. We will hear opening statements from each of them. Then we'll have a conversation before turning it to question and answers from our live virtual studio audience here. And so I'm happy to turn over the mic to newly elected Senator Dick Anderson. Senator?
Thank you, Andrew. And certainly thank you to the City Club of Eugene. I appreciate that. I am the recently elected and more recently sworn in state senator from District 5 here on the coast. Let me take a moment for those who aren't perhaps acquainted with District 5 to describe it for you. It's a large Senate district. On the northern edge, boundary is just south of the city of Tillamook, and it goes all the way south down the coast to the southern tip of the city of Coos Bay. On the easterly line is pretty much the coastal range, and we dip into Yamhill County and Polk County for just a little bit. In total, I touch partially six counties and the entirety of one, being Lincoln County. We're comprised of seaports, of airports, of railroad lines, of state highways. We have casinos. We certainly have rural hospitals, state correction facility, a federal correction facility. And as a region, we are perhaps the highest unemployment rate as a region right now, and typically remain in that category. And I think about that as our backbone for the economy has been in the past and continues to be, you know, farms, forests, fisheries, and tourism. And certainly with the pandemic, you know, the tourism aspect has been greatly impacted. You know, we're an older population on the Senate district. And as far as political, you know, we look a lot like the state of Oregon. It's interesting to note in Senate District 5, 26% of the registered voters are Republican, 32% are Democrats, and 42% are unaffiliated. And yet, this is a district that elected myself, Republican, and I take that as a compliment and probably recognizing, as I hope the state does, that you know, voters have perhaps decided that the two parties, the extremes in the two political parties, have gone too far. And it's now to come back to the middle and create some balance in the legislature. I've had great committee assignments, and I say great because one, being a member of the super minority party, the Republicans, and then being a rookie, I got placed on the full Ways and Means Committee, which is quite unusual. And I have two subcommittees under Ways and Means, and that's Natural Resources and General Government. As far as actual Senate committees, I'm on Housing and Development, as well as the Human Services, which is Mental Health and Recovery. I'm actually vice chair of that committee. And finally, there's a group of us representatives and senators that touch the coast called the Coastal Caucus. It comprises of seven electeds. And currently, we just switched five Republicans and two Democrats. A week ago, it was just reversed as that, but because of the election, the Republicans have become dominant in the caucus. But that's been quite a powerful group in the legislature because we touch so many different committees and influence. So it's for a region, it's had a lot of impact. Andrew had asked me to talk a little bit about challenges for this region. And, you know, I look at them from a legislative perspective. We're probably going to be faced with three primary themes. That's having to do with COVID, wildfires, and then the overall budget. And those challenges certainly are impacted from our coastal region, both individually and communities on the coast. You know, I've talked about in my campaign for this seat, the coast has been forgotten by urban politicians. And that's one of the things that I'll be trying to shine a light on for this region. And I say that because, you know, when we talk about the urban-rural divide, in most cases, if not all, rural is thought to be Eastern Oregon. The coast isn't even in that discussion. And, you know, yet when you look at economic statistics for the state of Oregon, pre-COVID anyway, the state has shown some just really hard-charging, strong economic recovery, more revenue than ever before. But when you dig down into the coastal region, you know, we have not recovered, quite frankly, from the recession of 2008. And so those are some of the things that I hope to change as I enter my term as state senator in the legislature. And the things that are getting in the way are certainly childcare, housing, a trained and motivated workforce, broadband. Most recently, it's actually taxes. You know, that corporate activity tax has raised its ugly head. especially with restaurants that are being faced with having to pay a tax when they've been bleeding revenue and not making a profit. And then those same entities that have suffered through this COVID, those small businesses, are now getting notices of their premiums for unemployment premiums for the coming year. They've all risen significantly, even though they were forced to shut their businesses and lay off their workforce. So, you know, it's devastating for the local economies. Opportunities, you know, as I talked about the challenges, those challenges also turn right into opportunities. COVID has created a great opportunity. We've seen an exodus from metropolitan areas to the coast. Our second homes are full-time now, not being rented, but by the owners as they've left the more urban areas. We've discovered that at least when the internet works and works at a level of consistency, you can work from home or work from anywhere and you know, attend school from anywhere. Our natural beauty keeps people here. And you know, even our lack of housing stock offers a opportunity for builders, because you wonder why the free market hasn't worked on the coast, why there aren't contractors and builders building more houses. So those for me are an opportunity. And then finally, you know, the disappearing middle management that we have going on in this country, our support and efforts with community colleges through the blue collar economy provides just a huge opportunity for the coast, assuming we can support the community colleges and put them in a position to train those necessary skills for the blue economy. With that, I'm going to pass it to Chief Slater and wait for questions later.
Thank you, Senator Dick Anderson, and congratulations on your win in the Senate seat. Hopefully we'll be able to work together in that positive way. My name is Doc Slider. I'm the chief of the Coos Lower Umpqua Sayusla tribe. We've been around for over 10,000 years in this area. We signed a treaty with the federal government in 1855. When we did that, we ceded over 1.6 million acres of land to the federal government. Not only our tribe, but a lot of the tribes on the coast also signed a treaty that was similar to that, and most of them never received a penny for their land. We were terminated, like a lot of the tribes in the state of Oregon, in 1954, August 13th, as a matter of fact. We fought for 30 years, and we were finally reinstated on August 17th of 1984. So since that time, we've been building up our government and trying to move forward in a positive way to help our tribal members and the community. Dick mentioned, we are a owner of one of those casinos in Florence, the Three Rivers Casino. With the Three Rivers Casino and the employees that work in the Eugene area, in Florence area, I think we have like over 360 people employed. So, which is quite a few, and probably at least 50 plus people are work on the government side, and yes, the rest probably for the casino. With Dick brought up the COVID-19, you know, one of our big decisions that we finally came to, as everybody knows, you know, we closed our casino down for 6 months. It pretty well took, well, it did. It took all the money that we had laid aside to pay the wages and to keep the business going. So since that time, with Lane County being high on the list, we made the decision to keep our restaurant open. When we did that was a very hard decision. Had we not kept it open, there would have probably been 25 to 30 people that had been laid off, adding to that unemployment. Some of the things that we did to work with the state to keep that open is, we have when you go to the door, if you've never been there, there's an ID. You have to show your ID, and when you show your ID, that's for contract tracing in case somebody does break out that the day that you have to be there, they'll be able to reach you. And you get your temperature taken. And masks are required at all times unless you're eating or drinking. We have inside the restaurant, just like a lot of the restaurants, you know, we've cut our capacity down to 50%. All the tables are 6 foot apart. We have plastic shields around the bar and points of sale. When somebody leaves, they use a UV handheld wand to go over the area in case there is somebody did actually have, was packing that coronavirus with them. So, you know, we've gone through that process. Along with that, we've, in our air purification units, we put in 5 units inside those that where the air circulates through that kills that virus. We have a lunchroom for our employees. We have a small UV unit in there and also a UV unit in our finance office. We've gone through those extra protections to not only keep our employees safe, but our guests, because without our guests, you know, the casino would not be there. The money that we put into the area is the building of the casino, which was over, you know, over $50 million, you know. We purchased a golf course a number of years ago, which is a few more million dollars. Peace High Care a number of years ago, the hospital, we did a $150,000 donation to that. You know, I think it ended up being like $45,000 a year we put into that till that was paid for. The Three Rivers Foundation, in the last few years, they've donated to 229 organizations, and they've donated over $1 million. So, we're trying to do the best we can for the economy on the coast. One of the things that, as I was watching the news today, Cushman, the road's closed again, you know. That's one of those projects that, everybody in on the coast has been working with the state to try to get that problem taken care of, you know. And so what a good day, a bad day to have the road closed, but a good day to be able to bring that back up to everybody's attention. That's one of the big problems, you know. If you come to the Florence area in the summertime, it's pretty busy. But in the wintertime, you know, it's usually just the local people that are around. One of the big problems that I see in the area is energy problem. And Dick kind of talked on that a little, touched on that. Internet seems to be very spotty and not really sufficient to really say it's there at all times. You know, you get a storm brought in. You know, I live up Coos River, and I can't even get cable TV or anything, you know, so I'm on a satellite dish, and I'm probably lucky to have that, but if it storms too much, it's gone, you know? So, that's a challenge. The energy, you know, all the energy on the coast of Oregon brought in, we have nothing that generates energy. I know here a number of years ago, and maybe Dick may be able to answer that question, but there was a small wind generator in Yachts, but I don't know if that's still going, and that was only running one business, you know. I think that's one of the things that the Oregon coast really needs to think about, trying to be able to generate some of our own energy, especially, you know, with the tsunamis that, you know, that could one day happen with the earthquakes that, you know, will eventually happen, whether it's my time or my grandkids' times. Probably going to be one of the big projects, you know, trying to get the roadways into the area. And that's not to say that the state doesn't do that job. They do that at a pace. As I know last year going to Eugene, we're doing quite a bit of work there. So, you know, each little improvement they do brings a few more people to the area. So it's that process of remembering what we need and to keep on that to make sure that it doesn't go down the list. Keep those projects on the top of the list and bring them up every 4 or 5 months so that we don't forget about them. And I think that's pretty well about all that I have to say. And again, thank you for inviting me to be part of this, and I'll turn this over to Bettina. Thank you.
Hello, and thank you for having me, and thank you for the nice introduction. I'm Bettina Hannigan. I'm the Florence Area Chamber of Commerce President and CEO. And I think that this is an amazing panel of people bringing the different ideas and thoughts and challenges that our communities are facing here on the coast. I think Senator Anderson brought up a lot of the topics that are in my wheelhouse that we struggle with here. I think one of the things that I've worked really hard the last 5 years on is to be at the table. And I think that we have a saying over here, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So we'd like to be at the table, and it's difficult when we're 60 miles away. It's not like we can just be at every meeting all the time. I'm actually speaking to you all from one of my very dear friend's bedrooms, because I was at the Eugene airport this morning, and I can't get home to my home office because Cushman is flooded. So it's always nice to have friends that loan you their house, feed you lunch, and give you their computer to be able to Zoom in with all of you. So it's nice to be here. You know, one of the challenges that we have here in Florence is obviously similar to the rest of the coast, and that's housing. One of our dear friends is a general contractor here in town, and he gave, just as an example, he gave a bid to build a home for a family last year, and they didn't take it at that time because they had different reasons, and so they put it out for bid again this year. It came in over $30,000 higher this year than last year. Material prices have just skyrocketed. And it's very difficult to get skilled labor over here on the coast. If your heater or air conditioner goes out, you might as well just sit and wait, because it's going to be a while, because we're just short on skilled trades. And everybody, the businesses here are struggling with skilled workforce. And then when we finally do get those workers, and we build that relationship, and we have the stability, because being a seasonal economy here with the tourism, you know, it's a big burden on employers to be able to keep their employees year round. So there's a lot of struggle for that. I actually came up with the idea years ago that if we could create a phone app for our hospitality industry, then maybe in the summertime they could come here from Palm Springs when Palm Springs shuts down, and then in the wintertime they can leave here and go back to Palm Springs. And I thought, God, maybe I'd make $1 million with that app, but that was as far as that went. So we do struggle with our workforce, and with our, you know, I think one of the things that's the most heart aching thing that we struggle with here is so many of our young people grow up, they get through school, and they move away. And I think that, you know, sometimes you move away because you want to, even if you're in a big city or something. I think a lot of our young people move away just because they need the opportunity for a career and to have those resources. It's very difficult for small business to be able to afford the insurance and the overhead and the staff support that larger corporations are able to leverage. And so it makes it a more challenging and more competitive environment to get and keep good workers and to keep that job satisfaction high. COVID has given us a real double whammy here in Florence. Our little community is about 15,000 people, if we include some of our outlying areas. And the city itself is around 10,000, but we do $147 million a year in tourism revenue on a regular year here. That equates into almost 2,000 jobs. So those jobs are all in the not all in the hospitality industry, but they're all affected by hospitality. So imagine your family comes to town from Eugene, and you come over and you stay in a hotel and you do go shopping and you eat. And then those workers that served you take their salary and their tips, and they go to the True Value store and they buy home improvement items for their house, which then they hire a contractor to use them. So those tourism dollars swim around in our town quite a bit before they leave. And so the tourism, even though a lot of jobs aren't considered tourist jobs, they really are funded by tourism revenue. So it's, I know there's a lot of talk these days about some of the restaurants. We've got some here in Florence. I know there's some in Springfield that are, quote, defying the governor's orders. I would like to change that word to trying to survive through the governor's orders. I don't think that, I think it's a lot to do with perspective. I don't think it's a rebellion. I think it's desperation. And we're seeing a lot of people getting very desperate. And I talk to the employers. I take their phone calls. They're in tears. They're not in tears because they're losing their homes, which they are. They're not in tears because they're losing their hopes of retirement, because they are. They're in tears because their employees are losing their homes. Their employees are losing their cars. Their employees aren't able to take care of their children. They're trying to, in the struggle and the stress that our employees are going through, trying to school from home with internet, you know, with internet that's sketchy to say the least in some areas. And, you know, if we were kind of programmed to be teachers, we'd all be teachers. And so these parents are struggling with working from home, being school teachers to their children, which they've never before, maybe teaching them a different style of learning than what we were raised with. So I think that from a chamber perspective, and I say this all the time, that the chambers are like hearts. Hearts have chambers, and the chamber has a heart. And even though we represent business, and sometimes it appears that we're cold-hearted and that we don't care, everything that we do is really because we do care. And many times I've said it, and I know it's an uncomfortable statement, but it's very hard for poor people to help people. If we don't have businesses doing business and making money, then we don't have people providing jobs. We don't have people mortgaging and spending money and leveraging these resources in our community. If we don't have our businesses being successful, we don't have any money to support the Boys and Girls Club or Rotary or our churches or the other things that we're passionate about are helping and our service to our community. So I think that those are some of our challenges. One of our, I think the opportunities that COVID has brought to us is this very environment that we're in right now, Zooming. We're all tired of it, but we're doing it. And I think that it brings us together in ways that we wouldn't have been able to as frequently as we have. I've had the pleasure of meeting Senator Anderson before and the chief before, but I've gotten to visit with him now twice in 1 week, which we haven't been able to do in years. So I think that it's been wonderful to be able to be at the table together, to build these relationships together and overcome challenges. One of the strategies our chamber is partners with the city and as a tourism marketing agent. And one of our slogans that we've developed through this process is work where you play. So, you know, come over to the coast and work where you play. Our hotels have internet. We've got hotels with kitchens in the rooms, so you don't have to eat out if you don't want to. And, you know, just kind of doing different resources, you know, so work where you play, learn where you play, and just coming together and being more flexible. I see a future. I wonder what we're going to do with all this office space that's not going to be needed anymore, because we all have confidence that we can be productive working remotely. So that's an interesting idea. And one of the things I've thought about over the last year is, you know, maybe some of that property can be converted into housing for some of our less expensive options, you know, maybe doing some kind of dorm style housing or something. So I think that as a country, we're going to see a lot of changes. We're never going to be the same. We're going to be different. And change is not easy, but it's the only thing that is always there is change. And I think that, you know, I lived in Palm Springs for years, and there's a reason why those trees grow sideways. It's because it's windy and they've learned how to be flexible. So I think that as we all just kind of start to embrace some of the change that we're going to see around us and come together and work with each other with what we share, our passions for our community and for the people that we love and for the health of our communities, that we're going to see a brighter future, even though it's going to be a different future. So with that, I am done with my soapbox, and I'm going to turn it back over, and I believe we're going to be open for questions. Is that correct?
Well, thank you all so much. Let's dive right into a couple of the issues that each of you raised. One of those was infrastructure. We know how critical it is to economic growth, whether it's roads or broadband. If you had a chance to sit down with President-elect Biden or better yet, Congressmember DeFazio, the chair of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, What would you tell them about the coast's infrastructure needs? What are the things that would be on the top of your priority list to make sure that the coast had what it needed to succeed? And if we can start with you, Senator, that'd be great.
Sure. And I think that's an important note that we often have the opportunity, fortunately, in Oregon to sit down with at least our Congress members and raise some of these issues. Transportation, infrastructure, broadband are all key elements. And we need to make that pitch that the coast, as well as the entire state of Oregon, is in need of assistance. But I would also keep in mind and have our listeners keep in mind that perhaps we look too much towards our federal government. And I get, with a financial background, get a little concerned about deficits. We've got multiple trillions of deficit on a federal level and are adding to it with the COVID. So I just think we have to keep in mind, you know, where the funds are coming from, what we're willing to give up to impact our desired areas of interest and keep it in balance.
Chief Bettina, I know you've also encountered these infrastructure issues on a daily basis. Do you have anything to add about what you'd tell the president-elect or your Congress?
Yeah, I would agree with Senator Anderson on all those topics. You know, I was born in North Bend. I'm 69 years old. When I was going to high school, Coos Bay was the largest export of timber in the whole wide world. And now when we export timber, most of it we're importing from Canada to export. You know, what we did is we took a natural resource and we pretty well stripped it down to a bare minimum. We need to remember not to do that. You know, timbers are one of them, one of the things, you know, and now when they, you know, when they harvest trees, they go out and plant them. You know, so at least it's something that, you know, in 35, 40 years, you know, they can be cut again. But, you know, one of our major problems is just as you come into Coos County and the city of Lakeside is a green algae problem in the 10 Mile Lake system. You know, and you talk about a city that runs on tourism's coming in, you know, tourists. And, you know, but you have a green algae problem in that lake that is there for 6 months out of the year. They say you can get in the water, but don't let that green stuff touch you and don't swallow it. And don't let your dogs in the water because they're probably not going to survive. You know, we need to think about those things. You know, like I said, I'm 69 years old. And in my time, in my 69 years old, the things that I have seen disappear on this Oregon coast, it is sad. You know, we need to open up our eyes and start to be more respectful and to think about not only our generation, our grandkids' generation, but seven generations down the road. You know, because if we want those tourists to come to our area, we need to have something for them to come to, not a lake full of green algae. Thank you.
Another issue that you all mentioned was the workforce. And the Wayne County Workforce Partnership's recent State of the Workforce report noted that while historically a majority of the county's jobs required little in the way of training or education, new trends are showing that some of the fastest growing occupations require post-secondary education and training, sometimes even for entry-level work. And so I'm interested in what you think about what we need to do to position our workforce of any age with the tools that they need to succeed in the 21st century economy. I know, Bettina, you are on top of this all the time, and I'm curious if you could kick us off on this one.
You know, I think that there's different types of knowledge. And I think that sometimes we all kind of lean towards what is more common knowledge, you know, which is a more academia-oriented knowledge. You know, and sometimes we need to kind of tap into the experiential knowledge. And that's something that Mary has been great about doing is bringing over a teacher awareness program. we all kind of get in our silos. And so I know what goes on in my world, but I don't know what goes on in your world. And I think that part of the best thing that we can do is to open those silos up and say, okay, well, if we've got students that maybe aren't academia oriented, but they're loved hands-on orientation, then let's get them into some skilled trades. You know, if you're an academia person and you want to go through school, that's great. But I think that the more skilled trades jobs that we have are going to build a stronger economic base for our families, for our families to be able to provide for themselves. And I come from a background, I was a general contractor for 20 years in Orange County, California. And people would say, Bettina, you're a contractor? And I'd say, yes, I have a butt crack too. I just don't show it to everybody. So, you know, I don't think that I'd fit the normal, you know, code for what you'd look at a general contractor. So I think that gives me a little perspective that we can't always pigeonhole people. We need to be able to think outside the box and find different work environments for people to be satisfied. The higher their satisfaction is going to be, the better the quality of their life. And the more likely they'll be able to stick to it and advance in that career.
Andrew, if I could jump in there too, because I certainly echo what's being said, because the vocational training is certainly a huge need on the coast. And as I said earlier, I think the community colleges up and down the coast are uniquely positioned to play that role. Recognizing also from these reports that the workforce is aging out, and we need service sector folks taught in the trades. And that's not to move away from the, you know, post-secondary education needs, because that's definitely there. And I would expect that coming from a Eugene City Club kind of question with the University of Oregon right there. But on the coast, you know, welders for the marine world are missing. Plumbers, electricians, you know, the day of the middle management people, I think, have long gone. I don't want to make predictions, but, you know, I think we'd be better served at, you know, putting more emphasis into, you know, technical training. At least bring that up to a par and support the community college effort in that arena.
Each of you mentioned the extraordinary natural beauty and natural resources that the coast has. And one of the ones that you mentioned was wind. And it just so happens, as you probably know, one of the fastest growing job sectors in the country has been in wind energy in recent years. And recent reports suggest that your part of the state is one of the areas that could benefit most from this growing industry. So I'm curious what each of you think about what the coast needs to do to fully leverage this opportunity, whether it's wind or the other incredible natural advantages that the coast has. And Chief, your people, as you say, have been here for 10,000 years, you know it better than anybody. I'm curious if you could kick us off with this one.
I mentioned earlier about energy on the coast. You know, all the energy is imported. You know, we need to figure out a way, whether it's going to be solar or whether it's going to be wind or whatever, to at least be able to produce a small amount of energy for that time when that tsunami comes because of the earthquake, or what happens, you know, when that earthquake happens. You know, as everybody on the coast is aware of, there's bridges everywhere. You know, those bridges aren't going to be here. You know, we're going to be pretty well locked up, and energy is going to be one of those things that will not come back for a long time. You know, so that's, you know, and energy is one of the fastest growing parts for jobs now, you know, and so we just need to figure that out, whether it's whether we're going to start doing some solar energy, some large projects, or whether it's going to be wind energy out on the oceans, or is it going to be on the land, you know. Those are all questions. You know, our tribal council just here, I think 5 or 6 months ago, maybe even less than that, passed a resolution, you know, pushing, you know, trying to figure out a way to figure out these questions that we're asking, you know, about the energy. You know, our tribe is actually in the process now of doing an energy project, trying to figure out what we can do to cut down on the energy, you know, whether it's going to take putting a solar panels up on our buildings or whatever, and try to, you know, to make it a little better. It's not an easy answer, I figure that, you know, that process is probably going to go on for another 3 or 4 months before we even start talking about what can we do, you know. Tribes, we own like close to 15,000 acres, you know, some of it's forest land, but, you know, it's like our offices, you know, do we want to put up solar panels on the top of the roofs or wind energy, you know? Those are some of the questions, you know, and to conserve what energy we do use is a good thing too, you know. Those are questions that really need to be answered. And I think that they're moving forward in that positive direction, energy, you know, and along with energy, like you said, is the jobs that it's going to create, you know, and that's when the community colleges will probably really work out really good, you know, to bring that workforce up to that level to be able to work on whether it's going to be solar panels or wind turbines or whatever it's going to be. Thank you.
Terrific. Thanks very much. We'll turn to our live virtual studio audience now for questions. And Karin, I understand you have one.
I do. Thank you, speakers, for joining us today. It's a great presentation and discussion. And Chief, my question would start with you, but maybe also Bettina and Senator, if you would be willing to offer thoughts as well. It is related to the nomination of Congresswoman Deb Haaland as our first Native American cabinet member as part of the incoming Biden administration. And Chief Slater, even following on some of what you were just describing, could you share a little bit with us about the significance of that nomination and also, you know, your thoughts about what it might mean for the Confederated Tribes along the coast and in Oregon and across the country?
My hopes are that the person is tribal and they know what the tribal people have gone through, and to try to be that voice for the tribal people. You know, but then again, there's that process to me that when somebody is there to do a job, they should do the job no matter who they are. When you put somebody in that is tribal, they understand what has gone on, you know, since the beginning of time, you know, what they've seen, the years that the tribal people were taken away from their moms and dad and were put in trade schools, you know, and they never even knew who they were until after they got out of their trade school. Things like that caused that problems for generation after generation that the tribes are finally getting taken care of, you know, that abuse that they received at those internment camps and trading schools. And, you know, the tribes are finally figuring out a way to get through those problems. And somebody in upper management position like that or Senate are already aware of those problems, and they can talk to those problems in a positive way to turn some of those problems around. It's a positive thing that I see and hope in this next 4 years that we will see some of that positive direction, not only for the tribal people, but for the Mother Nature herself of trying to protect what we have in a way that 7 generations down the road, it'll still be here. You know, and again, I wanna bring to the point, you know, some of the things that I've seen disappear in those 7 years, lamprey. Lamprey is a fish and the tribal people ate on them for thousands of years. They're almost non-existent now. There's a salmon, you know, my mom lost her 2 years ago. She grew up in 10 Mile Lake, and she talked when she was a kid, you could go to the mouth of 10 Mile Creek where it goes into the ocean and you could walk across their backs. They were so thick and they're almost gone. You know, and Smelt Beach, you know, there's many beaches, you know, there's one up at Yahats called Smelt Beach. We have one down in Coos Bay. When I was a kid, we used to go out there and get smelt. And now you go there. I have an uncle that lives out by there. And 2 years ago, he saw a few smelt come in. That's the first time in years. You know, those are things that we really need to be aware of. And I think that the tribal people being here for that 10,000 years can tell that story. They've seen that, they've heard those stories come from their ancestors that, there used to be, herds of buffalo, or deer or whatever, So hopefully, that some a tribal person coming in will bring that forward and in a positive way and open up those eyes so that people can listen and hear and think about it. The first problem of having a problem is knowing you have the problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. Mary, you have a question?
Yeah, and this one is for Senator Anderson. I wonder if you see any opportunities in the bipartisan problem-solving group in the State House in Oregon for figuring out solutions that accommodate the real limits of budget and the real needs for infrastructure improvement on the coast. This strikes me as a surf to mountaintop need, but it will require compromises and thoughtful development. So where do you see bipartisan support?
Yeah, yet to be determined. I guess all here, we can only go by perhaps past history, and the Coastal Caucus has played, if we could go look at that group of seven individuals, a mixed bag of stature in the House and Senate and parties have gotten quite a bit done because they view the coast as their region and have been quite a powerful bipartisan voice in both chambers. So I'm optimistic in that respect. What I don't know is now with it flopping with five Republicans and two Democrats, whether that changes the dynamics in a legislature that is supermajority Democrat. Will the voices still be there? Will they be heard? And that's been the trouble, quite frankly, when you have a lack of balance anyway, in my opinion, is especially in this case with a supermajority. The optics make it look like or sound like everybody's being heard. But in reality, if you have all the votes and don't need the other people, other party, except to have a quorum to meet, you don't really have to listen to them. You give them time, give, like I say, the optics. But you got to have two groups that are willing to listen to each other's concerns, put it in perspective, and deal with it. And I don't think we've had that in the last few sessions. I hope to see that change. And that has to do with the budget then. We're short of funds. The governor's proposed budget leans heavily on the feds coming through, which I think is a little unrealistic. So we're gonna have a tough time making decisions of really determining what isn't essential. Just because funding was provided in the past doesn't make it essential. We've got to get down to the, basics, the core support entities that, our state government, has. And it'll be my job to bring and make sure that the coast is heard. And that's where I think I'm best suited to at least stand up and shine the light, on our issues on the coast.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mary. Sandra, you have a question.
Yes, Sandra Bishop. I'm a longtime member of City Club, and the question is mainly for the chief and also the senator. The question I have, Senator, and I'd appreciate the chief to talk about this later, but Senator, you said the three big areas for you were COVID, wildfire, and the general budget. And when I hear wildfires, what I hear is increase. I hear it as a catchphrase that's oftentimes used as a cover for increased industrial logging. So getting at the budget angle and how this is connected, there's a big push these days to reinstate some of the harvest timber taxes that were suspended in the 1990s. I think by 93, they had really cut back and suspended that timber tax that the large corporate logging companies used to pay. So I'd like to get your opinion on putting that harvest tax in, given that it would bring hundreds of thousands of dollars into county budgets?
I haven't heard that aspect. What I've heard so far when I talk about wildfires, it's really the economic aspect, so which you're speaking to, but more the individuals, you know, that have been, you know, damaged survivors of all the fires, along with, and I think the emergency board put out a lot of money to preparedness for anticipating future fires, you know, emergency preparedness kind of things. And then the overall decimation of the communities, and so all those, it all ties into, you know, for me, the economics. But, you know, you're right. When there's a short of anticipated short of revenue, and that's what's the case going forward, you know, there are already long lists of circulated options of increasing taxes and fees and everything else. So it wouldn't surprise me, because buried in the wildfires is also forest management. I think, you know, kind of that prevention preparedness aspect. And I think it's been OPB that has run a bunch of series on these, you know, as you've stated, earlier taxes on forest production that have gone away. So it wouldn't surprise me, but I've not heard that aspect to date. But given the Ways and Means Committee, I'm sure, you know, I'll hear it right away and, you know, catch it. So thank you, though.
Great. Thank you, Scott. You have a question?
Yeah, the COVID pandemic has really cut international travel way down, but all three of you talked about tourism. Are there opportunities that might be presented for more local travel? And what does the coastal region need to be able to utilize them?
My experience is, and we had talked about this earlier, that in the chamber world, those of us in the execs are pretty tight with one another across the state. I sit on the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors also. And some of the chambers reports for the tourism up north, closer to Portland, was that their communities made a really financial recovery much quicker this summer than some of us, because of the affluent traveler that was coming out of the metro areas that did not internationally travel. And they traveled to the coast where they spent like they're not accustomed to spending internationally. And that was very beneficial for the communities. And I think that we're still seeing some of that here in Florence. We don't have that intense metro area that the North State does, the North Coastline, but we're seeing it. Our room tax revenue, and we had considered it was going to be way down this year compared to last year. And as of the end of November, the Florence area from July through November is up 8.5% over last year. So we are still seeing people come and work where they play, help learn where they play. It'd be nice if our restaurants were open so they could eat where they play too. I do think I was on a conference call with New Zealand and Australia with Travel Oregon a month or so ago. And you know, it's a little easier to shut an island down than a state, but they did do it. And it was interesting how they also, their tourism revenue was impacted. Those are two very strong tourism destinations. And they did the same thing that we're kind of seeing here in Oregon, is people started to vacation where, you know, at home and staycation or vacation or, you know, and that type of thing. So I think we'll see some of that as continue on in the next couple of years until the herd immunity is all in and people really feel comfortable sitting on a plane for 12 hours, you know, at a time.
And Scott, I guess I would agree with everything being said. It's not that all that the Oregonians or Northwesterners have forgotten the coast. The tourists certainly are coming to the coast, as is the second homeowners are coming to their empty houses and occupying them since March, quite frankly. I happen to be up in Lincoln City, and a third of our housing stock is actual true second home that sits empty, you know, 9 months of the year. Those have all been full. And so, you know, certainly normally businesses would most appreciate that increase, because, you know, being a community of 9,000, as Lincoln City is, we ballooned to over 30,000 most of the year with the influx of tourists. And so we have enjoyed more people. Unfortunately, as stated, the businesses haven't been able to be open. So, you know, you only can do so much takeout, so much, you know, of and the casinos have been shut down, and facilities. So there just hasn't been the recovery that we would hope. We saw similar in 2008 with the recession. The, you know, Hawaii folks and stuff traveling to Hawaii came to, you know, the coast instead, and that was appreciated, but it hasn't been enough.
I think also one of the advantages we have on the coast is it's a very easy place to socially distance.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much.
So I think that that's created, you know, we have a lot of outdoor activity, and especially like here in Florence with two golf courses and our dunes and our lakes and that type of thing. So I think that has been a nice reprieve for people to be able to get away and have that recreation and still be safe.
And for me, it's amazing the when you start looking at license plates, the amount of people this time of the year that are out of the state of Oregon. I mean, I've never seen that many out-of-state license plates this time of the year. It's truly amazing, you know, whether they're getting it, you know, they're coming out here and they're finding some internet someplace and they're working from here, who knows? But there's a lot of out-of-state plates this time of the year that you normally do not see, you know, which is bringing in money to the community.
Excellent. Thank you all so very much. We hope that when we're all able to get back together, you'll take your license plates over this side of the range and see us for real in the valley. We would love to have you, and we'd love to continue the conversation with you all. So thank you all so much. And we will be back with you next time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been our January 15th, 2020 program, Spotlight on the Coast, Economic Challenges and Opportunities. Before we proceed, I'd like to recognize our Diamond sponsors. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high-quality, affordable healthcare services and to improve the health of our members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. Support comes from the University of Oregon. Since 1876, UO has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate clearly, act creatively, and live ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. Peace Health is proud to serve Eugene, Lane County, and beyond. As your hometown healthcare partner for more than 80 years, our mission is to keep you and your family healthy. Learn more at peacehealth.org. Lane Community College transforms lives through learning. LCC provides comprehensive, accessible, high-quality educational opportunities that promote student success. For more information, visit lanecc.edu. I would also like to acknowledge our gold sponsors, Pacific Cascades Federal Credit Union, Jerry Diethelm, architect, landscape architect, and AARP of Oregon. Before we thank our speakers today, there are a few quick announcements. Thank you to our in-kind sponsors, KRVM 91.9 Radio, PAC Info and Simplified Computing, LLC, Dot Dotson's Photography, and a special thank you to public radio station KLCC 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Mondays at 7 p.m. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page. Next week, we will have a program featuring the newly elected city councilors for Eugene, Matt Keating and Randy Groves. Please join us again on Friday, January the 22nd. More details and information about future programs can be found online at the City Club's website, cityclubofeugene.org. Now, I would like to thank today's speakers for a great program, Senator Dick Anderson, Chief Doc Slider, and Bettina Hannigan. Thank you very much. This concludes today's program. Be well and stay safe.